Joe presents TKO together with 32 Red.
Hello and welcome to round five of TKO here on Joe together with 32 Red. This week, myself and Carl are joined by former British, European, Commonwealth champion, and of course, Carl's trainer, Jamie Moore. Now, on the first episode, those of you who watched will know that Carl and I kind of relived the night of the 22nd of December where you fought Josh Warrington. Neither of you have watched the fight back though, have you?
Not in its entirety. I've seen wee bits floating around social media that I've watched, none of which seem to be going in my favour at all. But that's all I've seen.
What about you?
Yeah, same. BT Sport put like a highlights version of it. So I've seen that's about 6-7 minutes long. So I take it that's all the best bits.
Yeah, all the best
all
bits.
All the worst bits, so to speak.
Well, and unfortunately for you guys, we're going to relive the whole thing today. Now, for those of you watching, obviously, you'll be able to see the highlights that we're watching as we go through them. For those of you listening on the podcast, I'll be talking you through them. So I'll kind of talk you through which round we're in and what we're looking at action-wise, just so you can follow along with us. How are you feeling about this?
I'm all right. I've been sitting here looking at a pause screen for quite a while, so I'm ready for it. I need to watch it because I'm going to continue on my career, so I need to watch it.
Okay, all right, guys. Well, we're going to get this video rolling courtesy of Queensbury Promotions. Thanks very much for giving us access to this. Let's hit play. So we're going to start right at the beginning now of round number one. Jamie, just first of all, the first minute of this fight, not a great deal happened. What was the game plan for the first couple of rounds against Josh?
Well, it was dependent on what Josh did. I sort of anticipated he'd do what he did, where he went off on the back foot and tried to move around and get Carl to come to him, and we felt like he was going to do those rushes and those quick attacks. The game plan was to not engage and stand and trade, but sometimes your heart rules your head, and that's what happened with Carl.
Already I look too relaxed here.
So we're looking at the first 10 seconds of round number one. Yeah. Pretty quiet first minute, and actually a lot of the beginnings of the rounds, Warrington started slowly.
Yeah.
How are you feeling at this stage?
I remember thinking if he's gonna box like this, I'm gonna be alright here. But then he's surprised me, and I think the tactics they got were pretty spot on, to be honest.
Why did you say you're too relaxed at this stage?
I just look a bit relaxed, a bit upright. A wee bit rigid here.
You agree with that, Jamie?
See, I sort of thought Josh would start like that on the back foot. And this is what he's done this in the past when he fought Kiko Martinez. He sort of went in the back foot. But he's not really effective while he's on the back foot. But he's very effective when he comes forward. And as soon as he changes that pace and comes forward, we always knew that was the danger. I'd said to Carl throughout training.
See, this is where he does come forward. That's the first kind of burst of action. He jumps.
I think
forward.
I've already been hurt there. Well, there I was hurt there. Definitely.
This is where you're hurt.
Now you see, the fact that he stood trading was something what was a definite no-no. I said the only way that he can have success is if you hold your feet and stand and trade with him. You can't live with in a boxing match, only in a fight. We'd stressed and we'd had conversations all the way through training about even Carl winning big on the scorecards was never physically going to be an easy fight. It was always going to be fought at high tempo. So I kept saying to him, even if you win it clearly, it's not going to be physically easy, because that's the sort of fighter Josh is.
I was hurt here. You can visibly see I was hurt a little bit and taken by surprise, I think, because I know, like, I was expecting a really physical fight, but
I think his power surprised you, didn't
Yeah,
it?
massively the power. I didn't expect him to be the punch as hard as he did.
Final 40 seconds in a round number one, you're looking tentative. You're kind of on the outside of the ring, and obviously you were holding centre for the first minute and a half.
Yeah, I was hurt there in that round more than I've ever been hurt in my life, and I'm just standing here. You know what I mean? Once I've been hurt, I'm like, and it was in this round at some point. I think it was either when I fell back awkwardly or in one of these barrages of he bounced his knee against my left thigh, just where that tattoo is.
What was it, like a dead leg kind of sensation?
Yeah, pretty much. And
so even there, your balance is off.
Yeah, the balance is bad there, but the bruising was... The bruising was pretty bad over the next few days.
I think he's still there the week after.
Yeah, in Dubai.
So, I mean, that's a pretty torrid opening round.
Of course,
as far as opening rounds go.
And, my advice in the corner is why he's standing trading. Don't do that. That's not the plan. The plan is to keep them feet moving, you know, get him on the way in. Let's start again and try and, you know, forget that first round now. Let's regroup and start again.
So Wangham back to the corner here as well. Bad round, hurt in the round.
Let's have a watch of this again. Just looking at some highlights
here.
I think
that's probably the one that hurt me there.
So that's the first major exchange. You both throw three or four shots, but he doesn't back up at all. You caught him with a solid left hook again. This is when you reel back across the ring, and I wonder whether, Carl, that's when you maybe hurt your leg.
Maybe, potentially. I don't exactly know when. But when I'm back to sit down in between the first and second round, the leg was sore there. And the plan was always to get up on my toes. But last thing I want to say to Jamie is, you know, I've just got battered and around there. My leg sore. You know, he might think he wants out. You know what I mean? No. I didn't want to give that impression at all.
Yeah, I can understand him not wanting to disclose that with me. The fact of the matter was, Josh hit harder than even probably I give him credit for. Even though I did say during camp, you know, I think he'll hit a bit harder than you anticipate. What all these records suggest. I was speaking to a kid actually at the border control meeting few Sundays ago, and he was Josh's main sparring partner for the fight and for the Selby fight, and he said he'd sparred him for years before it, and before the Selby fight, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he started punching much harder. He said, which surprised him because he'd sparred him for a couple of years, and he said, and then into the next camp for Carl's fight again, his power had increased pretty dramatically. So that probably explains the reason why he was having an effect like he was, and maybe it's maturity, you know, a little bit of slowing his feet down or getting his body to rotate a little bit more. But he's certainly carrying more power than he was.
Into round two now. So the first minute of round two is down for those of you listening. You're cagey, but you're holding the distance a little bit better than you were in the first round behind the jab. I guess that's part of the conversation that you'd had in between the round.
Yeah, and a big part of it was, don't be on that centre line. You know, when he does make those rushes and comes forward, he's very erratic with it. He sort of throws punches in bunches. But if you're straight in the middle, he's got to land. If you come off centre and change that angle, you're not going to be there to hit.
Carl, he's moving to his right a lot as well. Do you find it hard to find a home for the right hand? Because it looks as if he's moving to his right hand side more than usual.
Maybe. I was just watching this here. I was stepping back and kind of creating a decent bit of distance with my left hand, but I should have been maybe throwing a right hand over straight away, one step back. But I hit him a lot of shots.
Well, his face was marked up as much as yours was.
Yeah, but they were bouncing off him, you know what I mean? I was the one that was visibly hurt more in any exchange, even though he landed more than me, but I landed a number of clean shots on him. I'm not the softest puncher in the world. Like, I'm punched, but he's a tough guy.
I watched this yesterday, and in this there's a 30 second spell at the end of round two. He hits you with 35 shots out of 40 that he throws, and not all of them are landing on the head. Some of them the arms, the elbows, the gloves. But this is what we're watching now. This has got to be a hurt.
Oh, look at that's just wild for me. You know, I swung a left and a right hook from my arse. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, sometimes when I've been there myself as a fighter, it's so difficult to bring yourself back out of this situation once you decide to engage. You know, we're all fighters for a reason, and you know, when somebody buzzes you or hurts you, instinct takes over. So you're not thinking about the tactics what we've been working on for the last 3 months. You're thinking about survival and trying to dissuade him from letting his own hands go. So
I've just caught my wife Christine, who's got her head down there, and it's making me a bit emotional watching her. You don't, like, when you're in the fight, you fight, and flip me. Watching her going through that, and I felt like I understand why she spoke to me and said, like, she doesn't want me to box anymore. I completely understand that, but just watching her, it's the first time I've seen her.
This is me getting a bit annoyed now, but obviously emotions are running high, because I never anticipated Carl to be dragged or be able to be dragged into a fight like that. And let's be brutally honest, as much as Carl sort of was dragged in, Josh Warrington made him fight that sort of fight. You know, he was persistent with his attacks. He threw his punches in bunches, and it's very, very difficult to not engage in that way. there is stuff what we can do. I don't want to give too many things away in case you find him again.
Yeah, my feet are my best attribute, one of them anyway, and I just didn't use them as I should have. And without making too much of a shoot, I think that leg definitely.
I don't know if you're going to do yourself justice there, because I think as we watch this fight and it progresses now, this was another not a great round, but I think it was after this round we sort of got you back on track. And for you to be able to pull yourself back on track after such a horrendous start is testament to your conditioning and your character as well.
Just watch my feet here. Like, we're at the start of the third round, you know, and look at my face and how I'm plodding already. You'd swear this was 8 rounds in. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I've said this a few times to a few different people. After 3 rounds, it was like he'd done 12 in the corner. That's how, so physically, it looked to me like he'd done 12 rounds. So
not a bad shot.
For him to be able to go 12 and compete the way he did was a good, you know, testament to his character.
So into round 3 now, second minute, just ticking through. And as you say, just the pace has just dropped a little bit and it's been pretty non-stop up to this point.
I think he was fought in dips and troughs, wasn't it? You know, it wasn't constant action, certainly not at this stage. I think as it went down the stretch, it was more of a dogfight. But as I said before, Josh got his tactics very, very, very good. I was talking to his dad, actually. His dad was down at the gym yesterday, brought a lad down sparring with Akib, and you know, we were sort of talking about how good a fight it was for the fans, and you know, maybe do it again in the future. And I don't think any boxing fans would be complaining about that if that fight got made.
So just currently you're toe-to-toe and Josh has just got his head in yours.
He just caught me. I blocked the first few shots, but he caught me at the end of that exchange. I'm looking outside the ring at people's faces, like my family and stuff, and they're obviously a bit of concern. Look at my face. You know, 3 rounds in and it's a wee bit of a mess.
A lot of people in the crowd are shocked. They've got like a shock look on their face. I don't think they expected it to start the way it did.
What's it like to see your family sitting ringside? Does it bring it home?
Yeah, just Christine there, mainly. You know, she's still sitting with her, you know, covering her face. I suppose it's not nice for anyone that's close to you to witness that, and they're not in control of it at all. You know, I'm in there, so. I can't draw my eyes away from her. I'm trying to watch the fight, but I keep looking at her.
There's 20 seconds to go then in the third round. I mean, big difference in a fighter like this and someone like Nonito Donaire, because those shots are stinging single shots. He's got power in the shots, but not physically a strong guy, someone you can move around.
Donaire.
Josh. Yeah, Donaire, whereas with Josh it doesn't seem like you're able to move him back at any point or maneuver him as you want to.
Yeah, I mean, that's not really an issue. It's definitely not when you've got the attributes what Carl's got, and that was my thing, and I think I said it at the end of this round, you know,
closer round there, but he won the round, so
yeah. And you was on the way there to getting back on track,
yeah,
tactics wise and letting him walk into the shots. So I kept saying, close the door in his face, don't stand and engage with him. As soon as he wants to engage, close the door on him, tie him up, turn him, get off the centre, you know, let him walk into the shot. So what I was saying about him being out of press the issue, I mean,
there's a shot and then step away. That's me. That's my game. You know what I mean?
So was it just the leg that was?
Well, a lot of it was hurting me. I was feeling it after doing certain things. I could feel it. Look, just walk around the silly shots.
I think pride.
Yeah.
Was a big factor early on, and I think once you swallowed your pride, I think after that third round, I thought, right, if I'm gonna, my words were something along the lines of, if you want to win this fight, start listening.
Yeah.
Stick to the tactics, or you're going to lose.
Well, let me try and score us. So I'm 3 down after 3, right? So we'll score it as we go along.
This, I would say, Carl, coming up is your best round. Just a reminder for listeners on the podcast, you're listening to Joe on TKO. We into round 4 of our review of Frampton and Warrington with Carl Frampton and Jamie Moore. This was where you seemed to get back to the basics of, and I think the pattern that most people thought we'd see established in the fight, you sticking and moving, keeping the range, making him miss.
You can see as soon as Josh is sort of making out and trying to come forward and engage, Carl's taking that little half step back and not engaging, which is nullifying what he's trying to do.
So now you're backing Josh Warrington up to the ropes, and this is the first time in the fight that you've actually done this, really, because he was He's been on the front foot for large portions of it. Although, I would say, Jeremy, one thing, he does give away the, on the whole, of all the rounds, he gives away the first minute, and then he tends to start to get to work.
And that happened in the first two rounds. What Carl didn't do in those first two rounds was establish any work himself. He followed him round.
See what it done there, just there. He was pushing me back, and I just walked into him and closed the distance.
Yeah. See there, that's perfect. As he comes in, you just dip to your right hand side, clinch him, and then
if I'd done that the first two rounds, it might have been a different story. Steve McManaman ringside, good lad.
The first three rounds, or the first two definitely, set the pattern of the fight in a way and gave you such a horrendous start. It gave yourself a mountain to climb. Mm. But again, you know, credit where it's due, you pulled yourself back on track in this round.
And observation from our producer Simon, he said for the first time Christine's actually got her hands down from her eyes. She's watching.
I've seen that.
Your body language is different. You see that, look, that little half step back there. You're not engaging, you're not willing to engage.
Look at my dad's face as well. Mm. He doesn't show a lot of emotion, but he looks a bit sad.
See?
Yeah.
So single pot shots and away not being there for the comeback.
Yeah, the first 2 minutes of this round are a bit better. Well, in terms of what I'm talking about and what I've done, they're definitely far better, actually.
Of course, and look, this is nowhere near as exciting and you know, fanatical pace like it was in the first
perfect.
Two.
That's see what I've done there. Close the distance.
That's the way you win a fight against someone like Josh Warrington. You don't make it exciting. You make it a boxing match.
Again, that's a good example of what I should have been doing.
Yeah, just a description for people who are listening. Obviously, you're stepping into range, but as soon as he tries to throw you, smothering his attack, dipping to the right hand side, clinching, and then letting the ref separate you and going again.
Yeah, he's either dropping his weight in and giving him a nudge backwards, or he's totally stepping back and stepping out of punching range.
Nothing really landed here. But
those shots, presumably, when they're hitting you on the elbows, the arms, the hips, that's gonna start to take its toll as the fight goes on.
A little, to a certain extent, but I think, you know, they're not scoring punches.
I think I won that round.
You won the round.
3-1, coming back.
But he was running his rounds bigger because he was more action. Whereas you was making sure that you know, from a scoring point of view, you won the round. And that's what I wanted all the way through, really.
Just listen to what they're saying here.
I'm saying that he's trying to make it simple because he can't live with your skill.
Exactly, yeah. So you're saying essentially don't stand and trade with him because
my words in the corner was don't lower yourself to his level and stand and trade. Bring him to your skill set.
And in the pockets of action where you were doing that, working on the outside, keeping things long, he was struggling. It was the points where there was always a point in every round where he managed to drag you into the inside exchanges, and that's when he had success.
The thing with Josh is he knows what he's good at, and he's a very, very good high octane pressure fighter who lets
physical,
his hand go.
He's
and if you
physical.
Stand and trade with him in front of him, you're going to come second best because the pace he fights at, he's been doing it for years. You know, you can't match him for it.
So how are you feeling watching this so far into round five?
Okay. Just a bit. I know how the fight went, you know what I mean? In my head, it was give me that round. Good. 3-2, well done.
Barry Jones.
They give the third round a 10-10, which I disagree with. I think I was warranted round. I feel okay, Watson. I just know that I could have done a lot better.
Livened up a little bit there as well.
So mentally, where are you at this point in the fight? Feeling like you're getting any sort of foothold?
I don't know. Even like seeing fights when you've won pretty big and convincingly, you're still unsure of like how good a round is. Like I don't know what Josh is thinking, but even the rounds that he's winning big, for example, the second round. Is he going back to the corner and thinking, I definitely won that round, didn't I? Or is he questioning it? Because I would be questioning a lot of rounds, even when you do win them big and you watch back on TV. But here I am, standing, having a fight again. This is annoying me when I see this.
Is it? So yeah. what are you shouting at yourself to do that you're not doing?
Fucking move.
Yeah, but do you know, this is what I'm saying to you about being in that situation. Once you've had that horrendous start and physically you're very tired, you're not always capable of doing what your brain wants you to do. So like I was saying before, you've got to give yourself credit for being able to bring yourself back into this, because you really could have gone, you know what, I'm in this fight now and it's going to be a fight, let's just have a dog fight.
The fight you got injured against Ozzy Duran, wasn't it? You got injured early. Your hip went.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a training injury. I carried it into the fight. I thought it'd have been all right, and he just went.
And that was very much a case of your game plan went out because you had to switch orthodox.
God, I boxed the ref fight orthodox and foolishly asked the ref was going to pull me out at the end of the second round and I asked him to give me another round and then I got chinned in the next round. So
yeah.
Maybe shouldn't have asked him.
Decision out of your hands, yeah. But I guess that speaks to what you were saying, Carl, in not wanting to mention too much to Jamie because you don't want to get pulled out of a fight that you think you might be able to find a way back into.
And a point in this fight, I was just thinking, don't get stopped. There's another bad round, there's a winding round.
So you're both standing toe-to-toe and trading, digging into the body, uppercuts through the middle. Yeah. It's all short-arm shots here. I mean, you've said he hurt you on multiple occasions. Do you feel like you hurt him at any point? Because he was marked
up. I haven't been honest. I didn't in the fight feel like I've hurt him.
I don't think you didn't hurt him in that. I don't think you did. You definitely didn't hurt him as much as he hurt you. But you buzzed him up a couple of times. I think a left up there, you sort of stopped him in his tracks. But he covers it up very well.
He does.
He's got a real good chin.
Good chin, great poker face. So that's the end of round number five.
Score out to him. 4-1, Warrington after five.
Agree with that, Jamie?
Yeah, I would.
So this point, that
was a competitive round, and you sort of went. There was pockets where you stood and traded, and there was pockets where you give him that distance. Yeah. So it was a closer round, but I thought
in my head now, without actually watching the entirety of the fight, I feel like there was a few rounds that were close that he kind of won with a barrage in the last sort of 30 seconds as well.
He was very, very active in the last portion of every round.
Yeah,
very active, and that's the last thing that sticks in judges' minds because if you have a cagey 45 seconds at the beginning. So this is you here looking at you probably the most marked up you've been at this stage of a fight in your career.
Yeah, definitely, easily.
If a judge is watching a close round and they're, you know, coming into the last minute and they're thinking it's close on this, and then someone finishes the round strong, you know, it's natural that you're going to go with a kid who finishes the round stronger.
Now you've brought into your sort of training armoury a lot of the techniques that Oliver Harrison used to teach you in terms of conditioning and fitness. So fitness at this point, you're not having any concerns about him?
No, so do you know what?
Can I talk about my fitness as well?
Yeah.
I think there was a few people talking about my fitness levels and Josh Warrington, Duracell Bunny, looks like he could go on all day. Josh is pretty fit and always fit, and that's his style. I didn't feel in that fight, at the end of the fight, as if I was any more tired than I had been in previous fights. If I'm being honest, it was a high paced fight. My fitness levels, I didn't feel like I was unfit in the slightest.
I had a conversation with Rachel yesterday, who runs the stuff what we do at MIP, you know, in the altitude chamber, and that had a massive input into the reason Carl was able to stay in this fight and finish the 12 rounds. Like I keep saying, after that horrendous start in the first three, it was testament to his conditioning, and I think that played a big part of it.
So into round six now. About a minute
doing okay
in,
here.
This is again, you're tying him up, little shot to the back of the head. I think you just said to the referee there. Fighters don't tend to moan to the referee unless they're feeling a little bit uncomfortable, right? Because if you're feeling comfy, you let those things go. How are you feeling at this stage, you think?
In the fight, like, you know, if I continue to do from not knowing, or not, like, if I take myself out of the equation, if I continue to do what I have been doing, say I've done in the fourth round, I can still come back and win this fight. Yeah. I haven't been dropped. You know, I've lost some rounds pretty big. But in my head, when the fight was going on in the middle rounds, I still didn't think I was coming back.
I mean, it's so much harder to read a fight when you're the fighter.
It is. And from my point of view in the corner, after the fourth round and then the fifth round, even though I'm, you know, watching it back here now, I'd have just give it Josh. In my mind, I thought, you know, he could have got that round as well. So possibly, you know, we've got two rounds, Josh has got three. I'm thinking going into the sixth, we've still got a chance here. Mm. You know, he's not totally out of the equation.
Yeah, you're not calling for a knockout at this point.
Absolutely not. No. And I was hoping that Josh would try and punch himself out.
Stupid, right there. I would do a student, stood on the ropes and took a few shots. Up until this point, I was winning this round. And this is a prime example. Last 30 seconds of a round that I've let Warrington win.
Yeah.
But and that's what's happened. I let him win this round.
Of course, little stuff like tie him up, you know, just turn him, get off the ropes, have a little walk. You've got to try find those little areas where you just stop them from doing what they're trying to do.
See, there you've done that perfectly, but it's almost after
20 seconds
after all the work's done. Yeah, exactly. So why do you think you're not doing that? Are you just in the midst of the action?
I don't know, to be honest. It's a hard one to answer. I don't know. Machoism.
You see, now that was a good example of one of those rounds,
yeah,
where it was a very close round and then Josh was finished stronger. But, you know, going back to my point about hoping that Josh would punch himself out, because I was thinking and Carl was hurt, so the more Josh piled on the pressure and punched himself out in a way while Carl wasn't getting stopped, was good in our favour, in the sense that in the last third of the fight then I was hoping we could have put our foot on the gas and stepped on. He paced it very well, though, got to be honest.
Sean O'Hagan, to his credit, was giving some concise instructions. So this is where you got stuck on the ropes, Carl. Just looking at the replay
and
now.
This is the last half a minute of the round, and up until this stage, I've probably won the round. And now this is easily a Josh Warrington round, just because of the last 30 seconds.
So in this position, best thing to do is?
Hold on, turn him, move away, push his head down. Just do whatever.
Just don't stop him from doing what he wants to do.
I just stood with my hands up and give him a free target. It's pretty novice-y, basic stuff that I'm getting wrong here.
But in a weird way, again for our audio listeners on the podcast, we're into round 7 now of the fight between Josh Warrington and Carl Frampton, 22nd of December, watching it back for the first time with Carl and his trainee Jamie Moore. I mean, you're critiquing yourself, but it doesn't seem like anything that you're not capable of doing. Does this make you sort of burn a bit more for a rematch?
100%. And we're only 7 rounds in. You know, we've just passed the halfway point. But I'm watching this fight, and the things that I want myself, the things that I want to do, I can do them. They're simple things. That last round, all I had to do was hold on to them or move away, and I've won the round.
Because it wasn't like he never did them. It wasn't like DeGale and Eubank last weekend. This is very much, you're seeing him do it in pockets and bursts.
Yeah.
It's just that at times you're making the wrong decisions.
And we had this conversation over New Year. For me, it was a little bit like an inexperienced thing. And that sounds a bit stupid to say, considering the level Carl's, you know, competed and won at. But he hasn't, you know, when you look at somebody who's achieved what Carl's achieved, they've usually had double the amount of fights what Carl's had. So as far as it goes, for me, this was not being as experienced as he could have been in these certain situations. Mm-hmm. And he'll learn so much from this fight.
So this is where you see Josh was moving to his right a lot in round 7. I just wonder whether you'd stung him with a couple of right hands in the previous round and he just made him be a little bit more wary of the backhand.
It could have been a good, you know, a good tactic from Sean O'Hagan as well, to keep moving that direction. We don't know, but you know, we're almost 2 minutes in the round. I'm winning this round so far,
but just get the sense, Jamie, don't you, that the gap closes as the round progresses. Each round the gap starts wide and then you progress to kind of mid to short range, and then suddenly he's on top of you like we see now.
You can see the tempo of his feet change and he sort of edges himself closer and closer, and then once Carl feels like he's getting that close, he then decides to engage like this. You know,
I've done okay in this exchange.
It's easier said than done, though.
And
you know, it's all right. I was sort of stood here now watching you saying you shouldn't be exchanging there. But some of it's fatigue, some of it's pride, and some of it's just trying to dissuade him from coming forward as well.
And he's a bigger fighter than me, but he's good at getting his head down and low.
He often presses his head into your
neck. And I'm up above him. He's a more clever fighter than people give him credit for. That exchange there between the both of us, it was pretty even, I think. We both landed a shot there and I've held on, which I should be doing.
So last sort of 7 or 8 seconds now of round number 7 as we head into the break. Jamie, tactically, how aware were you of the injury at this point? Did you have any inkling that something might be wrong?
I had no idea about it until afterwards. So, it wasn't, you know, blatantly obvious that he wasn't able to use his legs as much as he'd have liked or we'd have liked. But
I think I gave myself that round as well, by the way. 5-2.
I think we might see Barry Jones' scorecard shortly. They're usually doing between 7 and 8, I seem to remember. So maybe we'll see how he's got you. But yeah, I think it was something like 5-2 at this stage on most people's scorecards. That was certainly consensus.
Yeah. I remember going to I went to the hospital after the fight and just talking about the leg, and my head was pretty swollen. That's the reason why I went to the hospital. And I tried to turn round, standing at the desk in reception. I tried to turn round. Barry gave me that round. I tried to turn him, and my leg kind of gave way. Yeah. And people thought it was my head.
Did you, Jamie?
They thought it was like, what's going on with his...
I was the one who said, listen, let's just go to hospital, just turn the safe side. I don't think there's anything wrong, but, you know, you can't be too safe. Better to be safe than sorry. And I wanted him on a drip, to be honest. It was such an exhausting fight. I just wanted to make sure that he was okay. But yeah, I didn't think it was his head, to be honest. He had mentioned his leg by the time we got to the hospital.
Be honest with me there. Mouth guard wasn't put in at the beginning of the round. Was that a little bit of time saving? He's smiling.
Not on my part. Maybe on Kerry Kay's or Nigel's. That's what you call experience.
Yeah, of course it is. And you know, people forgive you for utilising those in a difficult fight.
Yeah. I'm no good at putting the gum shield.
It could have been.
That decision out of my hand.
I'd say that may have been a Kerry Kay's move to steal a few seconds.
That's wisdom, you see.
Should have done it in between the first and second, right?
Shoelace undone.
And 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah.
So you got caught there, Carl, beginning of round 8. I seem to remember you putting a lot into this round. You're now standing and trading, digging the shots into the body. How hurtful were the body shots?
I wasn't hurt, if I'm being honest. I wasn't hurt to the body. I wasn't hurt to the body. I've toughened up in the old body era, and I give that... I credit Stevie Bailbird. He dropped me with two body shots at the very start of my career. I hadn't had a pro fight. Dropped me with two body shots 2 days in a row, back to back days, and I haven't been really properly hurt with a body shot since.
And we had Akib Fiaz, who was the main sparring partner for the fight, and he's a good body puncher as well, so he made sure he was conditioned down there.
I sparred well for the fight, didn't I? Like, you know, I was happy with the sparring. That's another thing I've said. Like, if I had been beaten up whole camp and then had the fight and the fight turned out the way it did, I'd have probably retired, if I'm being honest. But I performed well in camp. The fight didn't go my way, and that's why I want to change things.
I mean, I'd say
trading here, I'm having an okay round here.
You're having a really good round.
You can see you're fighting with your heart rather than your head. Yeah. And you can
Christine's
visually
not.
See
look at Christine. Oh, flip's it. She's looking at someone behind her.
You see If you'd have set out in this fight with the mindset you did against Danair, you'd have never in a million years did that against Danair, because you respected his power too
much.
Yeah,
I was so cautious of Danair's part.
And that's what I'm talking about, the mindset of it. You went into the fight with a different mindset, and that's why you ended up in that situation early on, which then evolved into this situation.
And is that ultimately why you started that first round so relaxed? Because you just thought, actually, even if I catch a couple,
maybe I don't know. But that probably is right.
Because a reputation for power creates tension, doesn't it?
Of course, it does. Exactly, and that's why I used Danair as an example, because
Tommy Coyle going ballistic.
We respected his power. 100%.
Do you know what?
If they had a rematch, 100%. Your mindset would be different, and you wouldn't make the same mistakes.
I won that round as well. So, although I'm thinking that during this fight, you know, there's no way of coming back. After 8 rounds, I have it 5-3.
Yeah, agreed.
Which isn't, you know, it's doable to come back.
And this is what I was. So I remember saying to you at the end of the third round, at the end of the 8th round, this is the last third of the fight now. We need to win these rounds, which is true, because it is a real close fight.
In my head, I thought the fight's gone. And I don't know. I don't know if that's a lot to do with the leg. And
that's why I should always listen to your coach.
I know.
Strangely,
not sounding like a smart ass.
No, you're right.
Wait, from the outside looking in, you'd always get a better vision.
But I think I couldn't do a lot of what I wanted to do.
No.
And in these particularly nutritional
fights.
I knew that
in the corner because of the start of the fight.
Like, you must have to rely on, in a fight like the Matthew Macklin fight, you must have to rely on Oliver Harris in your corner to tell you how it's going, and you have to trust that.
I remember getting back to the corner at the end of the 6th round, I think it was, and sitting down going, I can't do this. And he just told me to shut up and take me big deep breaths, and 30 seconds later I was fine. You know, you need, we have these little sayings in the gym, and a cool head in a hot kitchen is one of the ones that I like to use, and would have been perfect in this situation, because the atmosphere was unbelievable. The tempo of the fight was massive. You need to try and stay relaxed in those in them situations.
So into round 9 now, Cole. Obviously,
Barry Jones has a round in it.
Yeah. Which you would never have believed at the time.
Nah.
Yeah. So we're now... let's say 30
even
seconds
that in. Last round, the eighth rounder, which I'm watching back now, and I'll give it to myself. But in the fight, I'm probably saying to myself, I lost that round. It's really hard to judge a round when you're actually involved in it,
because physically, you wouldn't have felt great. You would have felt tired.
Yeah.
You know, you're constantly recovering. So, and if you think about how Josh would have been feeling, Josh would have felt quite all right, really. Mm. You know, he's so even though he's losing rounds, he's not getting beat up. So his interpretation of the fight would have been more positive than yours was.
Yeah.
Doesn't really reflect on scorecards, though.
Do you know what? I'd love to get Christine to watch this fight back again as well.
I don't know if she'd agree with that.
Maybe not, but I don't think it's so far it's not as kind of as brutal as I had it in my head.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well, because you only live it through your memories and the pain that you know you're
yeah,
in.
yeah I mean, think time kind of warps things and other people's opinions and stuff warp it, and you just feel like it was, but it's one side, it's a convincing win for him.
Hmm.
But There's things that I thought okay in that fight. A few little changes. The sixth round, for example, if I didn't have that barrage on the ropes in the sixth round and I'd have won the round, Barry Jones now has a level at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see there, like Josh goes on the back foot there and he's trying to go for a little breather, and Carl covered the distance and sat in the pocket, which you wouldn't want that. You'd want him, you know, keeping it long on the end of that jab.
And just as you say that, that's just kind of what you're doing, just keeping it here. But then it's that, like you say, it's just sitting down. As soon as Josh steps in, there he is, taking those two steps back. That's what you need.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, what you're saying about...
He looked a little bit more tired this round as well.
And I think because the eighth was so attritional, it took a lot out of you, and you put a lot into it. And that's what a lot of people started to say. I think the commentators at that point said that you were starting to get really tired.
Running on empty and stuff, I remember hearing that. I think that was unfair to say.
Yeah, you see... Look at Josh here, though. The last 30 seconds, again, puts his foot down and just tries to catch the judge's eyes. It's good tactics.
He's just thrown as well. You know what I mean? A lot of his shots, a lot of them aren't placed. He's just thrown. And even if some of them are landing clean, some of them aren't. But they're landing, they're hitting the arms, and it's just good and it's eye-catching.
But it is. But the only reason he's able to throw, and even if they're landing on gloves, is because you're there in front of him.
And that was his round.
And, of course, the crowd are reacting when he's throwing such big barrages of shots, even if they're just clipping top of the head gloves and a lot of their shots are muffled.
When you sat midway back from the stadium, you can't see if they're clean shots or not.
It's not easy to see if they're clean shots sometimes if you're ringside, because especially when he's throwing 7, 8, 9 punch combinations, when you see a jab coming through there, just looking at the replay from round number 9,
1, 2.
Then the right hand gets through. But it was just such a melee of action. He's just like a whirlwind at times. There was almost no thought process. It was just I'm inside and I'm going to open up and I'm going to throw whatever I can. I'm going to hit whatever I can.
Yeah.
But again, that's what he's good at. That's the part of his style which is good, is the fact that he makes you fight his fight.
Did you look at Christine or your dad or your mum at any point?
No. Someone give Christine a bit of stick on Twitter. She shouldn't be at a fight if she's going to behave like that. Behave like what? She's watching her husband in a fight that he's losing.
Wasn't Eubank Senior, was it?
No, yeah. No, it wasn't. but, you know, people just like to make themselves heard on social media and they give stupid opinions. I didn't notice Christine. I'm not looking out of the ring. I'm completely focused on Josh Warrington. That wasn't a bad shot, right hook there, good left hook as well.
See, Barry's got it 87-85 at this point with 3 rounds to go, so really you need to kind of secure 2 of those rounds to bring it level. So just looking at the two of you kind of exchanging at distance, which is kind of one of the unusual parts of the fight, really. A lot of it's taking place up close, and all the time, again, Jamie, doesn't matter how far into the fight we go, all the time the exchanges take place at distance. That's when Carl seems to have the upper hand.
Yeah and if we was able to maintain that throughout, it obviously it would have been a different sort of fight. But again, Josh is very good at imposing his style on you, and you have to find those little areas and pockets to stop him and shut that. I keep saying the same things, but shutting that door in his face, you know, you just have to stop him from being able to walk into punching range and let his hands go.
This is again just a case of me standing there and letting him do what he's best at. It's like
you've got to rate the engine of the guy, because the number of 15-20 punch flurries that he's throwing, It's unusual.
I said it at the beginning. You have to give him massive credit for being able to impose his style on you like that. Kyle's good enough to he knows the tricks, how to stop him from doing that. But being able to do it under fatigue, in stress, when your body's, shattered, they're two different things.
It's even this, like the way he's sort of thrown a 15-20 punch flurry, but then he's just gone for a little walk for sort of 35-40 seconds laterally. But I guess at that point, you're almost grateful for the breather as well.
I probably am. I'd say that's pretty accurate. But, I just you know what I mean? This is just stupid stuff, really, is from me. Winging again.
But see, I expected the last third of the fight to be like that. I didn't expect any of it to happen in the first sort of seven, eight rounds, because I expected Kyle to not allow him to do it. And then as the fight progresses, you both get tired. But I thought by that point in time, I'll have a big lead on the cards and I don't mind him exchanging like that.
And of course, you haven't planned for a power puncher, and you also assume a bit of the snap's gone out of the shots at that point. So, it makes it a crowd pleaser for the fans. It makes headlines and gives people their money's worth at that stage,
too. Of course. I've got to admit, I've always liked Josh, and I've known him for many years. Steve Wood has managed him. But in terms of respect as a fighter, my it's gone through the roof for me after this, because I know how good a fighter Kyle is. And for him to be able to impose himself on him like that, he's gained a lot of my respect.
I think you're right as well, and I think there was a narrative going in that although he was excellent on the night of Lee Selby, that Selby was a bit dead at the weight, and we know he was because we've seen his last two or three performances. But I guess
he's still an unproven fighter, Josh White. Then that's the thing.
Yeah, and again, he went up a level between Selby and yourself, and maybe that's what.
Like if you watch his fight, which was only a number of fights ago, four fights ago maybe, against Kiko Martinez, it's very, very close. And Kiko's someone who I beat. I stopped him once and beat him pretty convincingly the second time. Josh Warrington, even from that fight, which is 2 years ago, he's a much more improved fighter.
He's coming into his prime now, isn't he? What is he, 28?
Yeah, that was the other thing. They made a big thing about the age gap. It's only 3 years really between you, not a huge amount, because he's had quite a long road to success, really.
Yeah, and I don't even know how many fights Josh has had, but numbers-wise, going back to the experience thing, everyone looked at Kyle going massively more experienced, which he was in one sense in terms of the standard of fight he's been involved in. But as far as rounds go, because Josh hasn't stopped that many people coming through, he's probably got double the amount of rounds under his belt.
Yeah.
So we're into round 11 for those of you listening on the podcast, 2:30. Just ticking by of round 11, and
I always seem to do okay for about 30 seconds at the start of each round. But I think he's lapped me.
Well, he is working in bursts at this point, isn't he? Just taking his time, picking his moment
slowly,
and then it all sort of bursts into.
And in my head, at this point, I think the fight's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's worked in bursts throughout, and he does that. He's done that in other fights as well. In the Selby fight, you have a perception of Josh after the fight, because he fights in bursts and he throws so many punches in sort of one single instance. But then when you watch the fight back, there is pockets where he goes through his little walks and has his rest. It's not like he works continuously throughout a full round.
The last sort of 20 seconds or spell have been good from me.
So you said that
hold on, see there, instead of locking in, I should be holding on like I done there. And any sort of close exchange, I should be holding on or moving away.
Psychologically, how difficult is it when a fighter goes for a walk like that and you know they're having a breather, but actually you kind of want one as well? That's the point, really, where you need to will yourself forward, but it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know what? Going back to, you mentioned the Macklin fight before. That was one of our tactics for the Macklin fight, because Oliver had said to me, he lets his hands go, then he goes for a little walk, has a breather, then he goes again. In between, you have to jump right down his throat. So the reason the fight was like it was for that reason. And, ideally would have been able to do that with Josh, but again, the start of the fight took so much gas out of your tank early on in them first three rounds.
This is, no disrespect, and I don't want to sound deluded or anything, but just watching this back with a few changes, this is a winnable fight. You know what I mean? Going from what the perception that people have and being so one-sided, and it was one-sided, but a few changes, this is a winnable fight.
Well,
No doubt in my mind.
Like I'd said before the fight, you can win this big on the cards, but it won't be physically easy. And that's the interpretation I had of the fight before, and would be that, for you to be moving, getting him on the way in, anytime he tried to exchange, tie him up, get off that centre. But, you know, you live and learn.
You live and learn.
There were a few... close enough round, this one. Winding round again.
Getting finishes the stronger of the two. Yeah. Little smile on your face as you go back to...
I think I'm smiling because I'm like, you know, dickhead. I've just lost that round, which was reasonably close until the last sort of 5 seconds there, even.
You sort of... Your form started to go towards the last 30, 45 seconds. Mm. And that's fatigue.
Yeah.
Did you have the...
It's not things what can't be fixed.
Yeah.
Did you have the conversation at this point, Jamie, you know, you think you've got to stop him? It's a hard conversation, isn't it, that? Especially when you know he hasn't got a great deal in the tank.
I didn't think it was going to be a case of him being able to stop him. I think I said a round or two before, you need to win these last four rounds to win the fight. I said something along the lines of, you're going to have to dig deep here. I'm not asking you to do something that I've not done myself. But I can't give him enough credit for the way he pushed on and soldiered on towards the end, because it was so, so tough physically.
So the bell, and the one thing we must say between you two is, as much of a war as it was, you touched gloves at the beginning of every round, big hug at the beginning of the 12th, nothing but respect the whole way through.
No, there has been, and that's it's a fight, that's all it is, and it's a sport. But yeah. See, I knew I had to win big this round, knock him down, stop him.
No kind of indication, though, that was the problem, wasn't it? That you're not hitting really with anything to that point that you'd met, that it's
visibly
indicated that
shook him, did his boot driving. No.
There'd been no sort of encouragement by wobbling or anything like that.
That's
so.
The first I remember that. Look at my head was swelling there instantly. I was on the side of my head. Look at that.
Is this as deep as you've had to dig in the career this round?
Probably. Santa Cruz fights, I knew they were all pretty close and they were similar, but this, similar to the second Santa Cruz fight, once the final bell went, I just knew, you know, I hadn't won.
And Christine is very much head in hands at this point.
Yeah.
Carl as well.
A minute in this round and I've won the first minute so far.
Still not as tough as the triangle, though.
No, it's not.
Triangles are.
Yeah. There, a minute in the round, but 15 seconds later, I'm losing it. You know what I mean? And that's just stupidity. Me just standing still. And I learn him to work away and just let his hands go.
He sort of lull you into a full sense of security in those opening minutes by just not doing a great deal, just moving around.
Potentially, yeah, I think so.
Kind of letting you dictate a distance.
Mm.
And then suddenly just thinks, right, now's time to go to work.
Yeah.
The referee's just telling you to watch your heads there. I don't think there was too much in the way of head clash. Or your heads came together in that, a lot on the inside.
I don't think there were purpose. You know, he's not nasty with his head,
no.
But he fights pretty low and he comes in and a type of fight like this, you're going to bang heads. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah. Your head's certainly together on the inside, moving left and right. And
yeah. It's usually the smaller fighter comes off better in fights like that, but the shape of my head compared to his was a... Look at the state of me here, like, you know what I mean?
Mm.
I look like an English bull terrier.
So 40 seconds to go. How aware are you of time in each round?
You kind of know what 3 minutes are, don't you? When you've been boxing all your day, so you are aware of when a round's approaching.
I think it's very evident that Josh is so used to... He must do it on a daily basis in the gym. The last 30 seconds are always a big 30 seconds.
First minute he knows,
it's like ingrained in him. You can see as soon as... Every time I'm looking at the clock and he starts to go to work, there's always 30 seconds left. Now, whether there's a word from his corner or, you know, a little trigger word, or whether it's just instinctive to him, but he always finishes the last 30 seconds.
I mean, as difficult as it's been to watch, what a brilliant fight this has been for the fans. I mean, it was headlines the next day. That's the final bell. You both come together and embrace. And that was the great thing, that from start to finish, there was nothing but respect. And I mean, that's two champions, isn't it?
Of course it is. Regardless whether you win or lose, you've been involved in a fight what's going to go down in boxing history as one of the best title fights in this country. Mm.
What did you say to him there as you came together?
I think I said, try to be all poetic, and said something like the changing of the guard or something. Something like that. But
so you knew you lost.
Yeah, no, I knew I lost. I didn't even think for a second that it was close, if I'm being honest. And I'm scoring it now. I scored it 9-3 in favour of Josh. And probably 3 rounds that could have went my way.
There was at least 5 rounds where you was on the way to winning them, and he nicked them in the last 30 seconds. So
yeah, a little burst in the sort of in the middle of the round, and then finished the last 30 strong.
But and again, you've got to give him a huge amount of credit because tactically they got it, you know, pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I was saying to you before the cameras came on, I sat down with Richie Woodall and watched his fight against Roy Jones in the 88 Olympics for the first time. I think it was in 30 years. He'd never watched it because he said he was disappointed losing at the Olympics to Roy Jones. But he watched it back and he said, "Blimey," he said, "that was much closer than I ever remembered." How do you feel? What's the discrepancy between what you remember and what you actually
think? I
think
it should have been a draw. In my head, I suppose it was more brutal than it actually is watching it back. And that's saying something because it was pretty one-sided in terms of a win for Josh. But I had it worse in that. If you know what I'm saying, I had it much worse than that.
You know, I think as a fighter, you always have that perception anyway. Even when, you know, stuff like I remember myself as sparring, you'd spar and you think you didn't spar that great, and then you watch it back on tape and you think, oh, I did much better than I thought. Then
yeah,
your perception of it is always worse than it actually is. But you know, for me, watching it back, he's pretty much exactly the same as I thought on the night. I thought he pulled himself back into it well, made it competitive. Josh finished the round stronger, but like I say, they got the tactics spot on.
I lost the fight, but with changes, that's a fight that I could win, and it's as simple as that. It really is, and that's why I'm still doing it. Josh Warren's a very good fighter. I give him all the credit in the world, but look at this, you know what I mean? There's 5 or 6 unanswered shots.
Well, you heard it here first. Potentially the rematch is on the cards. I mean, Josh presumably would take it because it was a great fight. You know, there's no obstacles in making that rematch, is there?
Well, he's obviously got to take care of his mandatory first with, you know, Kid Galad, which it's not an easy fight, but I think it's a fight
Josh
should win.
Yeah.
So I'd have no issue with moving forward. I think it'd be a great fight for the fans. It's like you say, it's a good fight. It's a competitive fight, but I'd be very confident going into the rematch if it could be made.
Good man. Well, final thoughts then, Carl?
Final thoughts. I think that everything happens for a reason, and I let Josh win the fight just so I can get another couple of big fights before the end of my career. I was comprehensively beaten, but with changes, I could beat guys like Josh Warrington and Leo Santa Cruz and Valdez. If I perform like that against any of the boys I mentioned, I'm not winning the fight. There needs to be big improvements, but I know that I can do it. I genuinely do. And credit to Josh. I hope he goes on and beats Kid Galahad. Hopefully, you know, potentially we could do it again in the future. Who knows?
What will you say to Christine when you go home tonight?
I'd ask her to watch it. Well, watch the podcast. Just so she knows how much I love her.
I don't think you'll get to watch it.
No, probably not. But it's not as, I think, you know, as time elapses, things in your head become more cloudy. And I think that the fight probably wasn't as brutal as me or Christine had it on the night.
Good man. Well, thanks very much for sitting through it with us, guys. Absolute pleasure. Jamie, thanks for your time coming down.
No worries.
Carl, pleasure as always. And thank you for watching and listening as well. Remember, you can catch House of Rugby on Joe every Wednesday. But this has been TKO with Carl Frampton, round 5 done and dusted. We'll see you again in a week's time.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red.